Welcome to the latest edition of the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast. Right. Today we're going to be talking about saltwater aquarium fish that watercolors will not carry. My name is Ben. I'm the owner of the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery. I'm joined here by Amy and Charles. So I'm going to break into this topic right away. And this is a topic that I cannot tell you how much time and energy I have spent thinking about this topic. It's a topic that's hard for me to talk about because I hold it very dear. And I'm going to start out with a little bit of a story and then go into my first fish.
Okay. Sure.
So for my honeymoon, I got to go to Catalina Island. That was almost 25 years ago now. And I got to do some snorkeling around Catalina Island and got to experience some of the really cool fish that Catalina Island has to offer. If you're not familiar with Catalina Island, it is off the coast of Los Angeles, California. And the water temperature is usually around 60 degrees. It gets up to 65. It gets down to 50, fairly stable at those. It never gets to 78 degrees.
That's really cold. That's too cold for the air for me.
Yeah. It was actually it was an amazing place to snorkel. It was super cool. We didn't get to see the fish I'm going to talk about related to that, but we did get to see some other just amazing stuff there. The saltwater part of this topic is so much about responsibility, because when we did the freshwater one, there were lots of important things to talk about, and lots of things about ethics and morality, and lots of things about treating animals the way they deserve to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
and that was most of it, like making sure that if you're gonna give an animal a place to live, it's gonna be happy. Like an iridescent shark, you can keep one of those things alive for a really long time in a really terrible environment.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean you should. But that iridescent shark was never in the wild. Those are all captive raised at this point.
Right.
Most of the time, and actually all the fish on my list, when we're talking about saltwater aquarium fish, we are talking about fish we took out of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
The responsibility is so much greater. When we look at one of those fish, we have to remember that fish used to be on a coral reef.
Yeah, do you have any? I have one on my list that is captive bred ever.
Fun.
Yeah. Charles, do you have any on your list that is captive bred?
I have three that have been captive bred, but not on a private scale.
Okay.
I have two, and then one has been tank raised once.
Okay.
Which is a different thing. We'll get there.
It would not surprise me at all if there is some overlap on that fish in particular, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
All of them on my list, there are really cool alternatives to.
For anyone listening, we did work on several top five lists in the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
This one was by far the hardest one for me.
To find things or to, like, think about?
To commit to putting something on the list. Because most of the things that I originally was like, oh, I should put that on the list, I would think about it and be like, the saltwater hobby is a good, like, 20, 30 years behind the freshwater hobby, and we're still learning stuff. Like 20 years ago, if you'd asked me, oh, should we be keeping certain butterflies? I'd be like, no, but people...
I really like the point that you're hinting at.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And that's going to lead to some really, really cool discussion, I think.
Yeah.
with where this topic is going.
So it took a lot for me to commit to, no, I don't think people should, like... So several of them I had to frame it as, does this fish fit into the situation that people try to put it in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to pull a few off of my list for that same reason. It's like, my problem wasn't with the fish itself or even with keeping the fish. It was keeping the fish in the types of tanks we usually keep saltwater fish in. If you were to set up a tank for a few of those fish I put off, it would be fine.
I don't disagree.
So the ones I picked were ones that
I
didn't think could be done for the most part. Although there are a couple that I think could be done in the right circumstances.
Yeah. I have one that I think is an amazing aquarium fish, as long as you don't want it with anything else.
Well, maybe let's get into it then.
Yeah.
Ben, what is your first one that you were leading up to then?
Well, I have to go in a little bit about the criteria for what I chose.
Sure.
And I very specifically chose five fish that I see on wholesale lists and availability lists all the time. These are very commonly available fish. So, for example, a great white shark was not one that I included in my top five, right?
Right.
Right. Obviously, that's the extreme. Yeah. So that's what I went. That's how I narrowed my list down. Was I want these are fish that, geez, guys, why do you have that?
Yeah.
They're easy to get. They're always around, but just don't do it. And the first one is the Catalina goby. They are an adorable little, very hardy, very active goby. They have been bred in captivity, but they are from Catalina Island. They're from a very small, specific geographical range, and they don't like warm water. Now, the reason they're offered all the time is because they can survive if the water gets to about 75 to 80 for a while,
mm-hmm.
which every once in a while that happens in Catalina. Kind of like every once in a while in Michigan, it gets to 100 degrees. That doesn't mean 100 degrees is the right temperature for a white-tailed deer, right? It's going to stress them out and it's going to shorten their lifespan. And that's exactly what happens with the Catalina goby. They are readily available. They are not horribly expensive. They're beautiful, bright red and neon blue.
Yeah, I actually don't know this fish at all. Like, I don't even know of it. So if you could tell me everything about it, please tell me.
The second he said Catalina Island, I was like, I know where he's going.
I'm so spoiled here. So I really,
yeah.
I've never seen it because
yeah.
you don't get it in.
Nope. They are a classic, active, outgoing, beautiful goby.
Think like from temperate neon goby.
You're right. So really the issue with them is just that they can't be kept in the tanks that we keep for
cold
salt
water.
Cold
if
water.
Somebody, so, and actually I did, I have ordered them for someone.
Mm-hmm.
He set up a 25-gallon aquarium with a chiller. And a chiller for that aquarium is $250.
That's cheap.
Yeah. But it's an expensive piece of equipment
yeah.
for a $25, or for a 25-gallon aquarium.
Right.
And so putting it on the list, will you never see one here? Sometimes it gets a little tempting to get one of those little nano chillers and set up something for a Catalina goby.
Yeah.
But for the average person in the average aquarium shop to see a Catalina goby, if you walk in and you see that in with anything tropical, they are not doing it right.
I actually love the idea of setting up a cold water reef. I feel like that would be a really fun project.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the keeping something fundamentally outside of the parameters that it's expected will reduce its lifespan. So
yes.
that's a great one to put
that's
on there.
That's exactly what it does. Is it shortens their lifespan because it increases their metabolism to a really fast rate. Basically, it speeds up their lifespan.
Wow.
So a fish that should live 10 to 15 years is going to live about 2 or 3 at most. That's part of the reason why it makes it into a lot of aquarium stores. You can get a year or two out of one of those fish, which for a lot of people is good enough, but it is not good enough for me. There's
totally
my first
agree.
One.
That's great.
Amy, what you got?
All right. Well, I would say that the commonality between all of the fish on my list are that they are fish that I think are really cool. Fish that I would think if you could keep them well in an aquarium, then they're just really neat fish to learn about. The first one that I picked is a really charismatic one, and it's the porcupine puffer. These guys get to about 20 inches is usually average, but they can get bigger than that. Some say up to 30 is pretty normal.
I have seen them in the wild that big.
Yeah.
30 inches is very possible.
It's one of those that it says 20 inches on, like, if you look at pages of how big they get, even on Wikipedia, which is usually I balance my, like, Wikipedia versus Aquarist. Like, I try to look at both sides because they're usually coming from different angles, so that they say 20, but yeah, 30, even 36, I think.
They're big.
Yeah, they're huge fish. They need huge tanks. They're really active fish. 400 gallons is small for that fish. So I don't think that it is a good aquarium fish. And really, the thing with this fish, we've talked about it before. We talked about this on our last episode. There is a fantastic alternative. So the web burrfish gets 12 inches max. It's even, I would say, a little bit less aggressive. Both of those fish, though, are super prone to disease, so a porcupine puffer or a web burrfish or any puffer, really, is not something you just want to go to a store and grab and throw in your tank, because they're going to be sick. Porcupine puffer, I would even say 90% of the time I've seen them in stores, in home aquariums, or in public aquariums. I don't think I've ever seen a non-diseased porcupine puffer. You can just assume that they are sick.
Flukes and Ick. Yep. Those are the two biggies for those. And they are so susceptible to it. You can see in their eyes, those adorable puffer eyes covered in...
Just filmed over stuff. With white. Yeah, and they have those sort of like almost holographic eyes. So they sort of look like that anyway, but they just get that white sheen over them and look so dull. So if you're going to get a puffer, first get a quarantined one or quarantine it yourself. Second, don't get a porcupine puffer. Get a web burfish if you want that distinct puffer look and you have a big tank that does not have corals or other invertebrates in it. Otherwise, just avoid those fish in general. I know they're adorable.
They
not
are so
fun
cute.
In a tank. They're so cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why they're my first one.
I completely agree with that choice. Yep, well done. What you got, Charles?
So a lot of the things that end up on my list ended up there because I've either been asked a lot about them or previous experience with other retails, I've sold a lot of them and I didn't feel good about it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So my first pick was I put down most shark species.
Yeah.
I couldn't commit to just one, but I've had legitimate conversations of people asking me about, like, serious inquiries about nurse sharks, bull sharks, and tiger sharks.
Black tips are the other ones that
black tips are ones I get
a lot.
I have to admit something here at this point. When I was trying to narrow down my top five, you know me and sharks.
Right? Yeah.
I intentionally left sharks off of my list because I knew somebody else would bring it up.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like I needed to touch sharks because I knew Charles was going to cover it.
Yep,
so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's just so weird to me because there are so many good sharks that you can keep.
Mm-hmm.
Like we, and in the store right now, we have three species that we just keep as pets.
And they're so cool.
Like bamboo sharks, epaulette sharks, wobies, the smaller species, and coral cat sharks are all amazing choices that you can pick if you have like a 200, 300 gallon tank and up.
Mm-hmm.
Even down to... Some of those I would be okay with putting in a 180.
Yeah,
maybe
sure.
Even the ornate wobie in a 120. They're just so inactive.
Well, those ones would get big, but like a Ward's wobie and like
that's what we have downstairs, the ornate.
No, that's a Ward's.
You are right. Edit that part out, okay?
I'll let it out anytime any of this is wrong because
right.
that never happens, right?
Right, yeah. Yes, Ward's or Northern ornate.
Yeah.
Technically.
Which... I feel the need to only bring it up. I know for a fact that was a Ward's because that's the only of that species I've ever seen, and my reaction was very not safe for work when I saw it.
Yeah, so if you've ever seen Charles when he gets really excited, it's a lot of fun.
I've driven to other states to see certain species of wobies I've never seen before, and I've never... They're just not common in public aquariums,
right.
So I can't go to like, oh, I'm going to go to the Tennessee Aquarium and see a Ward's wobie. That just doesn't happen.
Right.
So
it's such a cool fish. The Requiem sharks are the group of sharks that everybody wants in their tank. That's, you know, we started out...
The Sharky Sharks.
The Sharky Sharks.
Yeah.
We started out talking about iridescent sharks, the catfish that looks kind of like a shark. And it's that look that everybody's going for. And the fact about... The Requiem sharks, those sharks that have that look, is their passive respiration system versus the active respiration system of a lot of the bottom-dwelling sharks.
There's an actual... So, technically, Requiem sharks would be classed as obligate ram ventilators, which is a fancy scientific way of saying it needs to swim to breathe.
Yes. It's more than that it just needs to swim to breathe. It needs to swim to rest.
It needs to be able to get into a glide.
Yes. And that glide is how a shark rests. So a blacktip reef shark, for example, has to get up to a certain cruising speed and then effortlessly drift. What that means is, for that shark, is the water is effortlessly flowing past its gills. It is not exerting energy by moving its tail or swimming. It is just gliding and moving water past its gills. That is how a blacktip reef shark rests.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say a blacktip reef shark would be a great addition to a 75 foot long aquarium. They would be fantastic in that. So they could get up to that speed that it takes for them to effortlessly drift. 75 feet.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest innovations in public aquarium shark tank designs was SeaWorld San Diego in the early 80s came out with this, and I know the viewers won't be able to see this, but it'll work for the people in the room. There's this like kidney bean shaped tank, and it's a really big deal because this tank allows for a shark to do a quick turn and then get into a long glide and then a quick turn and a long glide.
He's drawing a figure eight, if that makes it any clearer to you. Because they can actually get up to that speed if they can continually turn and glide.
Yep. I have never seen a home aquarium that's capable of producing that.
That's a mess thing.
Giant. And then people get into, okay, so what about a smooth hound or a leopard shark? Go look where smooth hounds and leopard sharks are found. Smooth hounds are not a requiem shark. They don't need that. What's the fancy term?
Oh, well,
the ram.
They do better with the ram ventilation, but leopard sharks are actually a ram ventilator. They're a weird one.
Smooth hounds are not.
Yeah.
But smooth hounds are from California area.
Yeah.
There you go.
60, 65 degrees. If you
I don't
want to
know what that chiller costs.
A 1,200 gallon or larger aquarium for a smooth hound shark and put a chiller on it to keep it at 60 degrees, I will help you find one.
Yeah, I don't even want to know
good
what that chiller
finding
costs.
That chiller. Like, good lord.
Oh, yeah, we can get it.
My thing with sharks is just that I think that everybody has a misconception about them.
Mm-hmm.
Either they are way better pets than you think they are, or they're way worse pets than you think they are. Like the type of people who should be getting into sharks are the ones that want that goofy, dopey pet that's going to want to be handled, going to want to be touched. But those aren't the sharks that you guys are talking about. Those are the bamboo sharks, the cat sharks, the epaulette sharks, the appropriate home aquarium sharks. And those aren't the ones that those guys that are like, oh, I want to get this really aggressive fish that's going to eat anything.
Badass shark.
Yeah, don't get a bamboo shark if you want that
badass
super predator.
You can say badass. I'm okay with the word.
We're saying badass.
You're right with badass. You want to talk about sharks? Yes.
Well, and that's the thing. You're 100% right. My first experience with sharks that I had my hands on was a group of male brown-banded bamboo sharks that were so excited that someone was there in front of the tank to pay attention to them. They were pushing each other out of the way to get to me first. And I didn't have food or nothing, and they knew that. They just wanted my attention.
They're so sweet. I love our sharks.
Our sharks downstairs, though, they do recognize people, and they do have favorites.
Yeah, they do. I know whose favorite I am not.
Very cool.
I've got one that's sort of related to this conversation if we want to flow right into that.
We can skip that.
Because
yeah.
I put remora on my list.
That's a good one.
Interesting.
Yeah. There are a few species of remora. 1 foot to 3 foot is probably enough to expect. When you're getting a remora, you're usually getting it by catch, so you might not even know what species it is. I think that the only reason anybody wants to keep that fish is just because the novelty of, it's the shark fish.
Yeah.
There's really no other reason to keep them to me. They need super oxygenated water. They need to be able to pass water over their gills. You cannot replicate their natural lifestyle in an aquarium. You can get them to adapt to an aquarium lifestyle, but still, a 1 foot to 3 foot fish that's not that exciting, I don't know why people want that fish.
I mean, I have a specific reason, but that's only because I specifically like remoras. But I don't have the tank for it. I don't think most people have the tank for it. And the trick is, most people who want them, you're right, they want them with the shark. But the thing is, most people who keep sharks keep benthic sharks. Remoras will harass your benthic sharks.
Sure, because it triggers that instinct in them of, I should be latching onto this. I should be, that's what the remora knows how to do. So if you kept it separately in a giant predator tank, maybe you could keep it alive, maybe you could keep it happy, but why?
Agreed.
Yeah.
Should not be.
Yeah,
in the
that's
hobby.
A short one, but
yeah.
I can't think of any reason to keep that fish in a tank.
I see them show up on lists sometimes. They are occasionally available, and you're absolutely right. This is a fish that's used to being able to latch onto something that's always moving.
Mm-hmm.
Your aquarium would need to mimic something that's always moving.
Yeah. I will like to throw out there, I throw out that keeping a remora would be cool to me, but purely for scientific, like there are things I want to study them that you can't do in the wild.
Right.
Not because I'm like, oh, I want to keep it as a pet.
Yeah.
No.
No, they're just really fascinating fish, but if you're keeping them separately in an aquarium, just as another aquarium fish, they're not that interesting.
No.
No.
A good call. Okay, we're coming back to me now.
Yep.
Okay. This is probably the one that's going to overlap on other lists. We'll see. But this is one of those fish that's like a litmus test for me when I walk into another aquarium shop.
Yeah.
It is a commonly available fish.
I already know what you're going
to
say.
And if I if I see this fish in an aquarium shop, I just get sad.
Mm-hmm.
The cleaner wrasse.
That's literally my number one.
Yep.
I left it off because I knew I was going to get to talk about it either way.
You knew it would come up. Yep. The only reason I brought it up now instead of at number one is so that I could be the one to talk about it first.
Yeah.
Fair.
They are such amazing little fish. And I have kept one before. I had one alive doing fairly well for about 8 months. I maybe could have gotten longer out of it. The only reason that I had it is because it was surrendered to us. So it was a true rescue. It was oh my gosh, I realized what I had because I bought it from another store that said they do just fine. So here's a couple of things about cleaner wrasses. Number one, they are an obligate cleaner. What an obligate cleaner means is they have to clean to survive.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is they have to have fish slime in their digestive system to properly digest food. So they have to have fish to clean and they have to have plenty of them. In something like a 600-gallon aquarium that's stocked completely full of tangs and angels, they maybe could get enough fish slime in their diet to survive. They will eat aquarium-prepared foods readily. They eat mysis, no problem. They eat pellet food, no problem. They cannot properly digest those foods unless they are cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
The other big challenge with that fish, and oh, by the way, there is a disclaimer because there is an opportunity that it's okay to have them. Yes, I said that out loud. The other big challenge with those fish is they are not born cleaners. They are taught cleaners. And their cleaning stations are handed down generation to generation to generation. I had the opportunity to witness the Hawaiian cleaner wrasse in its natural environment. You'll never guess where I was. I know, that's my little joke there. And to watch the fish line up, they just wait, sometimes patiently, for this cleaner wrasse to go do their thing, and they were yellow tangs in one of the coral heads that had cleaner wrasse in it, and they were ornate butterfly fish in the other one. And they all waited in line, and when they were done, they left. And you could see juvenile cleaner wrasse on the fringes of that little cleaning station where they were learning from their parent how to clean. They had to learn because at some point their digestive system shifts, and that's a biology thing that I don't understand it or know. I don't know the physiology behind it. But they had to learn how to clean so that they could get to their next life stage. When you pull a cleaner wrasse out of a cleaning station, you are destroying that cleaning station. That cleaning station is not only vital to the survival of the next generation of cleaner wrasses, it is also vital to the next generation, or to that generation of fish that need to be cleaned. I use the word need on purpose. That is something those reef fish need. There are cleaning stations and cleaning fish and cleaning creatures all over the ocean that perform that task because it is so necessary. The cleaner wrasse just happens to be the one that it's obligatory. There's a perfect substitute. The neon cleaner goby that comes out of the Caribbean is now most of the time available as a tank-raised fish. They are not an obligatory cleaner. If they don't ever get to clean a fish in their entire life, they can live out their life fully and be just fine and be completely healthy. And they're tank raised.
Yeah, cleaner wrasses are just inherently unsustainable. One of the few ocean fish you could say that about.
Yeah.
It's not anthropomorphization to say that cleaner wrasses have multi-generational businesses that they pass on.
Yeah.
It's documented that there are clients that will come repeatedly to the same cleaner station, and there are margins of, let's say, a tip that a cleaner rest could take. It's going to take off parasites. It's also going to nip a little bit at slime coat, and if it nips a little too much, then the fish won't come back to that rest. They build up relationships throughout their life and pass that relationship on to their children. If you interrupt that chain, it's gone.
Yeah.
Couple things. Not necessarily their own children, but yes, the next generation of cleaner
rests
because of the whole larval phase. Mm-hmm. That does allow for maybe in the future we'll be able to have tank-raised cleaner rests, but then you could only pull them off in a very large system, because we have one case where someone managed to raise, I think, like 4 Hawaiian cleaner rests just because they were capturing larval fish and raising and seeing what they got.
Yep.
Yeah.
But if you want something that looks like a cleaner rest but doesn't necessarily behave like a cleaner rest, Springer's Dotty Bats are a great alternative. Tank bred, readily available.
Are they really aggressive?
They're a similar level as an orchid dotty bat.
Oh, that's not bad.
Moderately aggressive.
Yeah. Not like one of the demon dotty backs.
Well, I consider most dotty backs... This is a debate for another time. This is not the topic.
Well, at least for the functions of this, though, they're not one of the dotty backs that you can't put in a mixed reef.
Yeah, I would say that there's a level of dotty... There are like 150 species of dotty back.
Right.
Most of them are not actually that bad, and I would consider things like orchids, springers, neons probably about as aggressive as most fish we keep in mixed reefs. Like, oh, you can get away with a couple of them. Same thing with clownfish, same thing with grammas,
yeah.
Same mm-hmm. thing with...
The Springer dotty back mimics the Red Sea cleaner wrasse,
mm-hmm.
which, interesting note about the Red Sea cleaner wrasse, they are also a part-time corallivore.
Yeah.
So you see them sometimes available as something that can go in a reef tank. Those guys actually do have a higher survivability rate than the classic cleaner wrasse because they can supplement their diet with coral tissue, which makes them not so good of an addition to a reef tank.
Unless you're into that sort of thing.
The dotty back, though, is a pretty impressive imitator of that fish.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, very cool fish.
Just for an example, we once kept, and this wasn't a cleaner wrasse because we don't get them, we had a neon goby in the same tank as a copperband butterfly that had a fluke infestation that just we couldn't get past for one reason or another. This was probably a couple years ago. And just those two together in a tank, being that a neon cleaner goby is not an obligate slime eater, let's say, not an obligate cleaner, that fish pecked at that copperband butterfly to the point where it got an infection and we lost it.
Yeah.
Keeping an obligate cleaner in with a handful of reef fish, I feel like that situation would replicate itself pretty easily.
The harassment's a notable thing.
Yeah, and just if they can't get parasites, they're going to get flesh of the fish.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's just what they're going to do. They have to. Needed to be talked about.
Yeah, amazing fish, readily available.
They're one of my favorite fish in the world.
They're so cool. Might be the biggest, when I walk into a store, some of the other fish on the list, I go, I'm very disappointed that they're there.
Mm-hmm.
When I see a cleaner wrasse in a store, I'm downright upset.
I might turn around and walk out.
I might say something at that point.
I've seen social media posts of stores that were advertising they had them, and it physically hurt me.
As a special.
It upset me.
Please don't keep that fish. Please don't keep that fish.
Sad. Yeah. Just and because when I see it, I think about the hole that it left in the ecosystem that it came from that no other fish can just jump in and be a part of. Yeah, I think they are doing tank-raised ones now, slowly.
I think that they have become available tank-raised through a few places.
Okay.
We're going to do some research on that, but I believe even Biota has produced tank-raised cleaner wrasses.
Yeah, if you see it here, it will be tank-raised.
It will be tank-raised. If those are out there, if those are available, sign me up.
If there are enough fish in the tank that it can clean off of.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
Is it my turn?
Yeah, dude, because I did two already.
All right, I feel like this one is going to surprise you guys, but I'm telling you, I have sold these.
Uh-huh.
Not here.
Of course.
Tarpon.
Oh, I have seen those available sometimes.
I'm 100% serious.
I'm in shock.
Never the Atlantic species, because that's the big one. They get a full 8 feet long, but the smaller Indo-Pacific species only gets 5 feet long.
Oh, that's
so,
a nanofish.
So that's okay.
So if any of you listened to the freshwater version of this podcast and maybe paid a little bit of attention to one of the freshwater fish that Charles was most passionate about on the freshwater list, the tarpon is a very close relative. One of the closest relatives, actually.
Tell me what you're talking about, because I don't remember.
Arowanas.
Mm,
tarpon
really?
And arowana are relatives.
I did not know that.
Yep.
Yeah, but the case of the tarpon is that A, it gets a lot bigger. B, it's pretty stiff body. They don't, like a tarpon, an arowana is pretty maneuverable.
Mm-hmm.
Tarpon are not.
They're meant for open ocean, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they don't wedge in crevices. They
giant fish.
Yeah.
Several hundred pounds.
Definitely one of those fish that when I see them on the list, I'm just baffled as to why that would even...
anyone want that?
I can't
understand that.
I cannot...
Because they're badass.
Yeah. I cannot fathom a private Aquarius having a tank big enough for one of those.
No. No. Agreed?
Why?
Agreed.
All right. So we've all done two.
Yeah.
Yes.
Should I do my next one then?
I mean,
sure.
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Yeah.
What
you got?
I kind of screwed up the order. All right.
We're used to that.
I know. I cheat on every single one of these. I hope you guys haven't noticed. So I could probably expand this next one to a whole category of fish, which is the types of things that get sent to you on Facebook from people who aren't aquarists. The ribbon eel is the one that I pulled off that could have made it. The one I went with is the pinnatus batfish.
Yeah.
Because I adore that fish. I would love to keep that fish. I don't think we can.
I heavily considered it. It was almost my number two. I thought it would be on Ben's list, so I did not do it.
Is it on your list?
It is not.
Oh, cool. I got lucky. Okay, well, they start off... If you've seen it, you've probably seen these videos shared around. This is the deep black fish with the orange-rimmed fins that looks like this graceful freshwater angelfish body shape almost. They're beautiful. They're
gorgeous.
They're vibrant. There's really, I wouldn't say, anything that has a color combination like them. Unfortunately, once they reach maturity, they turn silver and kind of like any other deep-bodied saltwater fish. They get to about 18 inches long, which means that they're a little bit more doable than some of the other huge fish like a tarpon, but I would still say 400 gallons maybe is enough. I don't know. An 18-inch fish, deep-bodied fish that is an omnivore that needs a huge variety in its diet is so difficult to keep.
One thing to keep in mind, though, because of how tall these fish are, you're talking about a depth and tank that I don't like working in.
Right.
And I'm pretty tall and long-armed, and I don't like tanks over a certain depth because I can't reach the bottom.
I don't like anything that's deeper than a 2-foot tank, and keeping an 18-inch fish in a 2-foot tank would be completely ludicrous, but even a 3-foot tank, it's still pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're very difficult to acclimate to aquariums wild-caught. I think most of that has been not understanding what their diet is. But also just that they're really high-stress fish that are always caught as juveniles that are already pretty easy to stress. A lot of times they get lumped in with big predator tanks, and they're not aggressive fish. They're pretty passive. So keeping them with those really outgoing aggressive fish isn't really a great match either. So they need to be in a fish-only tank with fish that aren't going to dominate them that is more than 400 gallons, and I don't know a single saltwater tank that is like that.
The only reason I didn't put them on their list, on my list, is because one or two of the companies out there, they are being tank-raised. So,
that's true.
Not that I think it is an appropriate fish and we should have them all the time. I put other things on the list that are not being tank-raised. And I kept... So one of the things that I struggled with when I was making this list are those things that are just plain hard to keep.
Yeah.
50 years ago,
a discus was almost impossible to keep.
Right.
Right? So I struggled with putting those things on my list, and I avoided it, partially because I kind of knew you guys would put those on the list, and we can have the discussion about those fish. The ornate batfish, because of its size, probably belongs on that list quicker than some of the other very difficult to keep fish.
Mm-hmm. To me, it's not even about, it's not really about the size. It's not even about the difficulty. It's about the representation.
Right.
You could go into a store and you see that little 6-inch black and orange fish and you want it. Trust me, you will want it. I want one.
Yeah.
I'm never going to keep one.
Right.
But they're so cool. And if somebody was there and just, and you said, I want that. And they said, sure, scoop, hand it to you.
There you go.
You have no idea what you have. You have no idea what it needs. They're complex. They need algae in their diet. They need a lot of different things in their diet.
Yeah.
So they're so hard to keep for being something that everybody would want if they saw it.
Yeah. So as long as we are discussing this, I think this is a good time to talk about the distinctions between these terms, because I think there's a lot of confusion around them, especially among hobbyists.
Sure.
So captive bred fish are fish that are, their parents spawned in an aquarium and they were raised in an aquarium. Tank raised fish are not captive bred fish. They are fish that, like that blue tang we have downstairs, that's a tank raised fish. It was larval pelagic plankton that someone scooped out of the ocean and then raised in a tank. It is not captive bred. And then wild caught is pretty self-explanatory. It's caught in the wild.
Yeah, that's a good distinction.
Yeah, and you'll hear people use tank raised and captive bred a little interchangeably because it's a little squares and rectangles, right? Fish
mm-hmm.
that are tank raised could be wild caught or captive bred and raised in a tank. So making that distinction clear. We're talking about that the batfish is actually captive bred and raised in tanks. Cleaner wrasses have been a little bit too. So if we're going back on our previous points, that's probably an important distinction to make.
Yeah. To my knowledge, I don't think anyone has managed to spawn cleaner wrasses. I could be corrected here, but I think all of them that I've seen are tank raised.
Okay. Let's fact check that one.
Yeah. Regardless, we won't be getting them in unless we know that they were born and bred in an aquarium.
Right.
I think that's safe to say.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
Amy, you had the last fish we had talked about was the ornate, the orbicular batfish.
Yeah.
Which is a perfect transition to my next fish, which is for the exact same reasons, only I think it's even a more popular fish, the harlequin sweet lips. There was a particular television show that used to use that fish on a regular basis. And they have just an incredibly poor survival rate in captivity.
You're talking about the show that liked to add the fish based on the theme of the aquarium versus their actual viability in aquarium?
I don't
want to
go into details about which show it was. I just know there was a TV show that used this fish a lot.
Sure.
The juveniles actually look sort of clownfish-like. And I think that's probably why they end up being... I think that's probably why they end up being offered in aquarium shops on a regular basis. They're a really, really cool looking fish. There's some evidence out there that maybe it's even a clownfish mimic.
This is one that, because I'm spoiled, I don't know that well. So if you give me the details about that, I'd also appreciate it.
I have never seen one make it into what I would term true adulthood in an aquarium.
Not a chance. Yeah. They, not only does it, A, grow into a big mean predator, which, as some famous people used to keep them, they would keep them with fish that would eventually turn into snacks.
Mm-hmm.
But B, for some
like
reason,
like a clownfish,
like a clownfish, yeah. For some reason, and this is one of those fish that we're not exactly sure why, it is an almost impossible fish to keep into adulthood. Big, large, happy, healthy systems. For some reason, harlequin sweet lips don't survive. It is a fish that if you see it in a store, the people probably just don't know enough about it to keep it. If you don't know enough about it, you shouldn't sell it.
So is it really just a long-term viability thing? Is there a size issue there?
Both.
Okay, how big do they get?
14, 16 inches.
That's a big fish.
It's a big fish. It's a bird predator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But imagine like something that size that with a mouth that big.
Yeah.
Right.
Like
it's a gulping predator.
Yeah, so big predator tanks.
Right.
If you could keep them long term would be the only option. But
that would be the option if we could figure out how to keep them alive.
I feel like for a lot of these fish like that, it's just diet. Some fish are so specialized that unless we know, we can't keep them.
The two reasons fish, the three reasons fish die is diet, water quality, and disease. Right?
Yeah.
There's, if it's one of those things.
If you can eliminate two, it's got to be the other one. And unless we go out and study them, we don't know.
Right.
But here's the thing. With things like diet, like things like mandarins, butterflies, I feel like that is attainable for a hobbyist.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I am not fully convinced whatever is going on with the sweet lips is attainable for a hobbyist because it's a predator that we can't keep alive, which to me probably implies that it has a very specific diet thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like
they
super,
only eat this one fish or
like
something
like
that.
Super specialized. And if we haven't figured that out accidentally by this point, it's probably not a food that we can get in the hobby.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Good one. Is it me?
It's you.
All right. Well, my next one is a fun one to talk about. I picked the engineer goby.
Oh, cool.
The engineer, air quotes, goby. Because this is not a goby. It's not a blenny. I'm going to get a little into taxonomic nerdiness here, and you guys can laugh at me for mispronouncing Latin, but I was really interested in this.
I was taught that it's a dead language. However you pronounce it is the correct way.
All right, I'm going to make it up then. So, the engineer goby, not a goby, is one of two species in the genus Pholodictes, which is the only genus in the family Pholodictidae, which is one of two families in the order Cycliformes. So you could say, if you wanted to make that argument, which I kind of do, that the engineer goby is one of two fish that are marine cichlids because they are the only other family in the order Cycliformes other than Cichlidae. Yeah, which really makes me want to keep them, but there are a lot of reasons not to. But I thought that was really cool and an interesting factoid that I did not know about this fish. I thought they were a goby.
I don't get to learn taxonomic relationship stuff very often about fish that are kind of popular. I'm really impressed, Amy. Nice job.
That was a fun dig. But yeah,
that's
you could call
cool.
them one of two marine cichlids.
Wow. All right. So why shouldn't we keep them?
You shouldn't keep them because, for one, I think the reason a lot of people want to keep them is because they think they're a goby or blenny. They're not. They get about 2 feet long. Their lifestyle is really specific. So the juveniles form basically huge schools that go out and get food and come back to their burrows at night. The adults never leave their burrows. So you really can't treat them like a goby or a blenny. Their lifestyle is not really suitable for an aquarium. Adults build huge burrows where they can keep their hundreds of babies that can get up to 20 feet deep.
Wow.
So, if you were to say, on average, a 2-foot fish could go into 300 or 400 gallon saltwater aquarium, I would say, if you were to talk about the engineer goby, you would have to be talking about the sand bed, not the water column, because they do not leave their burrows. So, if you could provide a 300 or 400 gallon aquarium's worth of sand, maybe you could keep them.
Interesting.
But juvenile engineer gobies are great aquarium fish.
They're so cute.
And they're so cheap. I could not believe how cheap these fish were when I looked online.
Right.
They're usually like $5 to $10. So you're either getting that fish assuming it won't live to adulthood or assuming you won't be able to keep it well if it does.
I've talked to a number of aquarists and seen it happen in a number of aquariums where someone had a juvenile engineer goby.
Mm-hmm.
And one day it just disappeared. At the 4 or 5 inch range. And then like 6 months or a year later, all of a sudden this 12 inch fish showed up in their tank.
Yeah. Some of these I would say, if you set up a tank specifically for them, you would be able to keep them. So maybe if you were to cement your rock work to the bottom of your aquarium, put in a super deep sand bed, I still don't think it's possible.
Right.
They go down that deep. And I looked at So I looked up the minimum tank size for that fish from the top 4 results for it. It was 55 gallons, 15 gallons, 50 gallons, and 70 gallons. And all of those fish were below $10. So you could buy them online with very little idea of what care goes into them, of what their lifestyle is like. You could keep them for a couple of years as juveniles.
One of them actually had 15 gallons.
Yep, that was the second result I found. If I just Googled engineer goby and looked at places that were selling them, 15 gallons. So people are just assuming that they're going to get them and they're going to die before they become adults. I can't think of what other rationalization you can
give for
that.
Did they list the maximum size, like what they said the fish would get?
Most of them said like 1 foot.
Okay.
But that's still not a justification.
A 1 foot fish in a 15-gallon tank, even right there, is a ridiculous idea.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
The lifestyle of the fish.
This is one where you could make some arguments for sustainability of. It's a quantity over quality breeder. They're going to breed a lot of babies,
mm-hmm.
and most of them are not going to make it to adulthood.
Which is what happens with most fish.
Yeah. So could you argue that if you scooped it before it got eaten as a juvenile and raised it until you couldn't keep it anymore? That's not an argument I want to make, but
right.
I could see somebody making that argument.
Now, I'm pretty sure engineer gobies are kept bred because you can breed them in a specialist aquarium. But now I'm bringing this up only to bring up the possibility of if you can captive breed it, does that mean that it's viable?
I've seen them on tank raised this year, captive bred this.
It's never been done commercially, but I'm pretty sure private aquariums have done it.
Mm.
So then that raises the question, if we're going to have that discussion and if I'm right.
Sure.
Just because you can breed it in captivity, does that mean you should keep it? My first argument is I would say no.
No, I think cruelty is cruelty regardless of the ramifications, regardless of if you're taking something out of an environment or not.
Good.
To keep something like that, I think is cruel. Like, they should be able to dig a burrow system.
My extreme example is going to be, well, we have captive bred killer whales. You're never going to see me argue that's a legitimate reason to keep them.
Yeah, that's an extreme example.
So let me come up with an aquarium counterpoint to that one, okay? And
sure.
I'm not defending keeping engineer gobies. I won't have one here.
Yeah.
I definitely have seen people keep engineer gobies, adult engineer gobies, for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
They have that burrow range of 20 feet. A yellow tang has a grazing range
mm-hmm.
of a couple of hundred yards. But we're not arguing you shouldn't keep a yellow tang in captivity.
I mean,
maybe we should.
I was like, I mean, you're not. there's
we're
a,
not going to become the tang police here.
Yeah, I touched on it a little bit. I do genuinely feel more comfortable having a shark in that tank that we used to have tangs and angelfish in. And
mm-hmm.
that's the reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason.
I think it's a consideration. I think, I don't know, maybe a tang lifestyle is a little bit more adaptable. If food was readily always available to a tang, would they still graze?
Would they?
I don't know.
Yeah. That's a good point.
If you're making that argument, a clownfish is one of the only fish we should ever keep in a saltwater tank.
Right.
Because they have that small of a range.
I think you could argue down to that if you really wanted to get to it. I'm not going to be the one to do it, and I'm for saltwater aquariums, so
right.
I
only brought it up because of your argument for keeping the engineer goby. Part of it was the size of its burrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you could keep one healthy... Our definition of healthy, not necessarily this definition of
right.
healthy, without the burrow, you can do that with the yellow tang.
Sure.
So here's going to be my counterpoint to that,
okay.
because this is exactly the type of argument I'm making to myself when
uh-huh.
I say my opinions on stuff like that. Things like grazers, like tangs, I'm a little bit more comfortable with because they normally have these big ranges because they need it to find food.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're concentrating the food, that range is theoretically less important to
mm-hmm.
them.
The engineer goby keeps a burrow that size to protect its young.
Yeah.
If it doesn't have to protect its young, does it need a burrow that size?
That's a quality of life thing, though, because...
Different than the yellow tang?
Yes, because how do we quantify for an engineer goby? Are they stressed out by the fact that they cannot produce... a 20-foot burrow? Do we think that a yellow tang is stressed out being in a 6 foot long tank.
I think we can even reduce it down to just practicalities. And I pulled garden eels off of my list for this same reason. If you give them the type of tank that they need, they are fantastic aquarium fish. If you give them the diet they need, they're a fantastic aquarium fish. I think that it's less true of the engineer goby, but I would say that if they're going to get 2 feet long, you should give them a 2 foot sand bed. I think that that's reasonable.
Yeah.
Even if you're not going to give them 20 feet, a 2 foot sand bed is ludicrous for any reef keeper. That's not something that anybody's going to do. Don't put them in a reef. Don't treat them like a goby. Don't treat them like a blenny. If that's really a fish that you need to have, set up an individual 180, 220, whatever, specifically for that fish. And I'd probably want to come to your house to see it.
That would be a cool setup.
Yeah. But who's going to do that?
Right. So I think that would fall under the category of grossly misrepresented in the hobby.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not a goby, not a blenny. It is a marine cichlid, if you want to call
it
that.
even though I'm playing devil's advocate with my argument, I do not disagree, and you would never see that fish here.
No.
So as long as we're on the topic of grossly misrepresented in the hobby, these are fish that I think you could. My next two are both fish that I'm like, yeah, you could keep them alive and you could keep them healthy. I don't think anyone is keeping them the way that they should be, though.
What was that?
My first one I put is the six-line wrasse. And in my notes, I literally wrote peaceful, and then in parentheses, in parentheses I put ha-ha. They are not peaceful.
They're sweet babies.
They're sweet when they're young, but when they hit maturity, good God, do they turn mean. And no one wants to keep this fish in, like... Like, if you want to set up, like, a 30-gallon and that's the only fish you want to have, go for it.
Great choice.
Well, maybe talk about the wrasse lifestyle, and that will lead you into why this fish cannot be really be kept that well.
So wrasses are kind of a, when you're not talking about cleaner wrasses, they tend to be kind of roamers, and that's, but inside the rock work.
Mm-hmm.
That's why their body type is, you ever see one swimming in the open, you'll see this kind of, like, hippity-hoppity type in the water column. That's because they're not designed for swimming in straight lines. They're designed for turning inside of places.
Mm-hmm.
Most small reef aquariums that people are trying to keep a six-line wrasse in does not have an extensive amount of rock work or areas to defend that it wants to have.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that everyone else is trying to take what it thinks it's his. And given his ability to win that fight, yeah, it's his.
That's one of those instances where you can use the term his accurately and know when they get that defensive, it is a male wrasse.
Yep.
I think some of our listeners might not know what is a female wrasse and male wrasse. So if one of you want to get into that.
Oh, are you talking about how they are sequential hermaphrodites?
Exactly, yes. Exactly. I don't know that that's that well known even among reef keepers.
So it's the reason that the... six-line wrasse shows up, even in many books, many popular aquarium books, the six-line wrasse is presented as a great beginner fish. For about 2 or 3 years, they are great beginner fish. When they're in their juvenile phase, their female phase, and even going into the transitional male phase, they can be just fine. The last phase for wrasses, when they are the biggest, toughest male in the group, oh, by the way, if you're the only one, you are the biggest, toughest male, you turn into what in wrasse terms is called the supermale.
As if they need more ego.
I know, right? In lots of the fish that we keep, the supermale is the one that's most often sold in the hobby because they're the prettiest. They're really cool-looking fish. In the six-line wrasses, there's very little morphological difference in the way the super male looks from the juvenile. If you look at something like blue-headed wrasse or a lot of the flasher and fairy wrasses, the Wardley's wrasse, the sexual phases are very notably different. Six-line wrasse, not so much. So that super male phase, all of a sudden, they just want to kill stuff. They want to say, if you are not in my territory for my purposes, whatever those purposes are. I want to kill you.
Yeah. I just want to be very specific on terminology, just in case I said something that our listeners might not know. So sequential hermaphrodism is a scientific term for it's born one sex, and then at one point it's going to transition into the other. If you ever walk into the store and ask me, what's the super male phase? I will respond with the terminal male phase. That's just what's in the scientific literature. That's how they term it. That's just how I'm used to referring to it. It's the same thing.
That's why we keep you around, Charles.
Yes, because we need words like that in our lives.
Yep. Nope, I like it. I appreciate it.
To me, the only excuse for the popularity of this fish is the lifespan of the average reef keeper.
Absolutely.
If you get it and you only have your reef for 6 months, then they were a fantastic, peaceful, easy, hardy fish to keep.
Even a year or two.
Yeah, even a year or two. If you get to that point where now you feel like you've gotten established as a reef keeper, which we've talked about this before, the average lifespan of an aquarium hobbyist is 18 months. So if 18 months is all you have, a six-line wrasse is a fantastic reef inhabitant. If you want your reef for the length a reef should be set up, which is decades, don't put a six-line wrasse in there because you're going to have to pull it out at some point or pull out every other fish you have.
Or pull out all of the rock so that you can pull out the six-line wrasse.
Yeah.
Because they're
good at hiding.
They're not fun to catch.
That aggression and terminal phase is a great transition into my next fish.
What's that?
Most damselfish.
I will come around to it, but my number two is a specific damsel. Only because it's a specific one, because I can tell you I have sold a lot of them. I have never known one to keep one.
Then why don't you talk to us about damselfish in general, and then we'll get to Charles' specific damsel.
I like the specifics of that. So there's a number of reasons why I think damsels are horrible aquarium fish and why it's very unlikely that you will see a damselfish for sale at Watercolors. And the first main biggest reason is they are treated as though they are disposable.
Mm.
One of the main methods of quote-unquote cycling a tank by some stores is to put a fish in there that you know can handle the difficulty of cycling a tank. And in the 70s and 80s, that was really one of the only ways to do it. When I kept my first saltwater tank, a damselfish was the first addition to that tank. They are inexpensive, they are plentiful, and they're incredibly hardy fish. So they can survive that transition into cycling an aquarium.
And most of them are gorgeous.
I'm going to go with many of them are gorgeous. Particularly as juveniles, and that's going to be part of my point here as well.
Yeah. I'm going to spoil it right now because my last one is also a damsel, but I don't think it's related to this conversation.
Excellent. So the idea of a disposable fish is absolutely disgusting to me.
Same.
Yeah.
When we cycle an aquarium, we cycle it carefully and we do it right. And we do it with a fish you want to keep in the tank long term. We love cycling aquariums with clownfish. They are closely related to damsels. They are almost as hardy. If you cycle an aquarium correctly, the clownfish will be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So using a disposable fish to cycle an aquarium is disgusting, and that's how many damsels are sold. And so there's two other points I have to make with damsels. Sorry, I'm long-winded tonight. The first one is the level of aggression of damsels. Damsels go through transitional life stages just like wrasses do. What was that fancy word you used?
Sequential hermaphrodism.
Sequential hermaphrodism. They are all born male, just like clownfish. I'm hesitating to use the word all because maybe not all damsels, but I know most of that. Most of them are all born male. And many of them in their juvenile phases, and the reason you can walk into a store and you can see 15 domino damsels and 15 striped damsels all in the same tank and no one's killing each other is because as juveniles, they can't tend to get along with each other just fine. They have a shorter lifespan. They transition into their terminal sex much quicker than a lot of other fish do, and then they just become jerks. We have one of the tanks that we take care of that has, it is a 540-gallon aquarium that has six yellow damsels in it. The yellow damsels are about an inch and a half. I don't think they're getting to the two-inch phase, We cannot put any other fish in that tank because each of those yellow damsels has sectioned off their own little 2-square-foot territory, and they will kill anything that goes in it. They have drawn blood on the people that take care of that aquarium. It's not too much for me to say that that particular tech hates those fish. They are jerks. The other group of damsels out there that you often see for sale in aquariums are really cute as juveniles.
Mm-hmm.
There's a yellow hornet damsel and the Beau Gregory and some of those, the dusky damsel. The dusky damsel is a great one. That name should tell you something. They start out as this blackfish with these little neon blue dots all over it. They turn into a big 4 or 5 inch brown, mean fish. They're terrible in aquariums. So there we go. Damsels. Now, the exceptions I'm going to put in there, the Starkey damsel. Those are some absolutely incredible, gorgeous fish.
I'm sorry. I'm just pointing at him because I'm hoping he'll say the exception that's on, like,
all right, thinking. Cool. I might get there. The Starkey damsel is actually a mimic of one of the pygmy angelfish, the joculator angelfish. They're beautiful. They're peaceful. Great fish. I'm going to put Chromis in that group, green Chromis, if you're keeping them as one or two.
Hold on to that for a minute.
Uh-oh, Amy's going to get into it.
Yeah, I'll put it on hold, though. I've got a minute to get to it.
I'll pause on the Chromis. There are a couple of other ones, the Allen's Damsel.
Thank
those
you.
Guys,
that's
love
the one
that
I was thinking
fish.
Of.
Yep.
Oh,
beautiful,
so pretty,
little
too.
Neon fish. They stay relatively peaceful. And there are a few others that can be okay. I do have to mention another one of the fish from Catalina that I got to dive with, the Catalina Goby, or I'm sorry, the Garibaldi, which is a member of the damsel family.
I did not know
they
that.
They get to about 7 or 8 inches. They are the most fluorescent orange of any fish that
they're
I've
so
ever seen. They're gorgeous. I got to snorkel with those in Catalina, and they were really cool. They get big, they get mean, and they like 60-degree water. They do not belong in a tropical reef aquarium.
I guarantee if you look it up, though, you've probably seen it in a public aquarium and probably been like, wow.
Because
I remember them from public aquariums. They're great there.
Yeah. They, when you see them from a distance, they look like a bunch of traffic cones swimming underwater.
They're so pretty.
I will say, though, I have an exception to damsel keeping that I'm okay with. If
good.
You're committing to, yeah, I just want to keep damsels because I like damsels and I'm fine with they're going to stake out territories and that's all I'm going to have. Sure, fine. Let's get you some damsels.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to do a 20-gallon tank with just one fish in it and you don't want clownfish? Many of the damsels will do well and be just fine.
They would
even
be
a pair.
Perfect.
Yeah,
and
perfect.
A lot of those 20 or 29-gallon nanos that...
Yep.
You just want a showpiece fish
yeah.
to show off
yeah.
your beautiful corals?
The yellowtail blue damsels, I'm seeing some success in some of the larger tanks with a decent-sized group. That one I might even actually include as an exception to that group of damsels. The dominoes, the stripes, and the blue devil.
Yeah, good luck.
All that right. fish has a good name.
We should probably let Charles talk now because he's vibrating over there.
Yeah, I have one specific damsel that I want to use the word despise over all others because I don't know anyone that has the temperament to handle like this thing coming after you.
See, now I want to keep it. You've already given it to me.
But it's the domino damsel.
Oh, yeah.
I have never seen anyone keep them because good God, do they turn mean and they will come after you. Like, I've seen people be like, oh, I want to keep a blue devil or I want to keep a stripe. I have never seen anyone commit to, I'm going to keep a domino.
Even a pair of dominoes could, I bet that could be a successful little 20-gallon aquarium as long as there's no other fish in the tank.
Yeah, and you wear gloves every time you put your hand
yeah.
in there.
Chainmail.
Kevlar.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But no, that was... At my previous retail location, the most frequently traded in fish.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet, they still sold it, didn't they?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
We always had them in.
They're so hardy.
If you come to me and you tell me you want a domino damsel, I'm going to do everything I can to talk you out of it, and then I'll order it for you. But if you still want it after all of that,
yep.
whatever.
And they're willing to keep it properly.
Yes, exactly.
Nope, I'm going to try it anyway in my 180 mixed reef. Sorry, dude.
Nope.
I'll sell it to you.
Nope.
Yeah, because you're going to lose your showpiece naso tag or something like that.
Something that you spent a lot of time and money on.
Yep. Yep. All right, Amy, what's your damsel?
All right, well, I put down the green chromis.
I figured you would.
Well, I put down schools of green chromis.
Perfect.
I think that a lot of people forget that chromis are damsels. You see this documentary footage with 300 green chromis swimming around, and they look so happy together, and they look like they could live together. And you go to your local aquarium store, and they tell you, if you want to keep a school of fish in your saltwater tank, this is what you keep. But I think if I say to you guys, I started with 10, and now I have 1... you will both get flashbacks of how many times you've heard that conversation.
All the time.
I've heard of success of people keeping like 30 or so, which is a lot how we keep African cichlids. But personally, I'm inclined to think that if you start with 30, it's just going to take longer before you end up with one.
Possibly. I'm inclined to think it could work only because I think there would be a stable hierarchy. But who wants to commit to a saltwater aquarium with 30 chromis?
Yeah, and... schooling behavior in general is defensive and opportunistic. It's not they just love to be together so much that they feel happy together. Chromis may school for feeding purposes. They may share territory for feeding purposes. At the end of the day, they're all going to their own holes. They're not spending time together. When they breed with one male, keeping a harem of several females. They don't mix together. They're not even one of those fish that goes up in the water columns and all spawns together. They are very individualistic, except for when they're feeding. They're just still damsels. Their feeding territories may overlap, but their breeding territories definitely do not. So when we get people who want a whole school of them for their tank, we just have to tell them that you will end up with one or two. And our rule of thumb lately has been around one or a pair per 2 foot square of tank space. So if you had a 180, maybe you could keep 6, knowing that you're probably going to lose at least one or two in the process.
And who wants to keep fish knowing you're going to lose them on purpose?
Yeah, just because they're cheap and you're willing to lose them. I don't know. I think that people need to at least be able to be told that. And I think most people who are keeping schools of chromis have never been told that they're going to kill each other. They've been told that they're going to be peaceful with each other and it's going to be fine. Some people who have kept schools for a long time just know that they're going to need to replace one or two every few months.
Yeah, I would love to hear from somebody who can tell me they've successfully kept a school of chromis for years. If you've kept them for months and you think it works, we do not measure success in months. We measure success in years.
I've never heard of it.
Nope.
Well, and this is just me wanting to get science-y on
it.
When we're getting down to there, it's either one or two, it's because they're another sequential hermaphrodite. And they're all born female. The dominant one becomes a male. And if you're lucky and you get a pair, what's happened is he found a lady he just really likes.
Yeah.
When you get down to
and
one...
And killed off the rest.
Yeah, he killed off the rest. When you get down to one, he didn't find someone he really liked.
Yeah.
They all tried.
They all tried.
That's something that we need to keep in mind when we're trying to mimic a reef in our aquarium. A reef is huge.
Yeah.
In a reef, if you've got two fish that don't get along, one fish can chase the other fish away. And the fish can go away. The fish can leave the territory. There's not enough room for that to happen in an aquarium.
No.
The fish is going to get chased until it dies.
Yeah.
That's going to happen with chromis. That's going to happen with cardinal fish. That's going to happen with so many fish that we try to think we can keep together. What's the best schooling fish for an aquarium? Neon tetras.
Yeah.
Not salt water.
Yeah.
I do not know of a successful schooling fish, a fish that we can really keep in a group in a saltwater tank.
Yeah, it's really just fish that have small enough territories.
Yeah.
Some of the little gobies, even neon gobies, you can keep a group of neon gobies, but they keep really small territories.
Yep.
Trimagobies, everything like that.
Yeah.
Antheus, it's not that they're peaceful with each other, it's that they keep smaller territories than other fish we'd want to keep together. And I think people come to it with such a misconception because a lot of people get into the saltwater world from freshwater, where in freshwater everyone's trying to convince you to keep things in groups,
right,
versus trying to convince you to keep things individually. So it's just your mindset that you need to reset, because reefs, when you think about the vastness of this, even the Amazon River Basin, let's say, if you're something that has distribution everywhere there compared to the vastness of open water along a reef, even that, those are still relatively bigger territories than you're seeing on this log of driftwood or this specific area of water column in this specific stream of the Amazon.
Yeah.
That was your last one, right?
That was my last one.
I'm good.
That means that I have my last one then. And my last fish that you will never see here at Watercolors, any species of parrotfish.
Oh,
yeah.
They are readily available. I see them on my wholesale lists on a regular basis. I've actually talked to the owners of two of the places, and yeah, I know, is the response that I get. Parrotfish have a very large beak that is a crushing beak. One of the fun facts about parrotfish, guess where reef sand comes from?
Parrotfish.
Almost all reef sand, that sand you like to squish your feet in, all over soft, the ocean.
Soft white sand, yes. Just lay out in it all the time.
It is almost all parrotfish poop. That is what reef sand is. If you can imagine the amount of parrotfish taking chunks out of rocks and corals and pooping that much to produce that much sand, that is the kind of lifestyle a parrotfish needs to lead.
Yeah, you think of it like this is something that eventually happens as it breaks down, but there's footage. If you watch documentary footage, I think it's in one of the Blue Planets or whatever. It's literally eat rock and then puffs of sand go out behind them. It's hilarious.
Constant. There are a few of them that are as small as 14 inches, but the amount of rock they need to consume to be happy and healthy in an aquarium is ridiculous. Most of them get into the 24 to 36 inch range. They are huge, beautiful, majestic fish. They do not belong in an aquarium.
I do know of near parrotfish that grow like 3-4 inches. I could see someone feeding that and doing well in a properly sized tank. I'm not going to name it, even if you keep it in, just because I don't want people actively seeking it.
Ooh. That'd be fun. I would like to research that fish.
I'm not going to get into the ethics of live rock in general, but knowing that it is a less sustainable resource, even if you decided that you wanted to buy enough rock to keep a parrotfish happy and healthy, you shouldn't. And we're not going to talk about that today. That's not a conversation for today, but it just can't be done.
Agreed. So there we have it. I think there was... Oh, I guess technically there were a couple of overlaps, but there were some overlaps with some discretion.
Yeah.
The cleaner wrasse, the damsels, those were definitely some overlaps. There were definitely some overlaps for misrepresentation, some overlaps for size, some overlaps for can we keep this alive. Maybe even some fish that were brought up that should have been on the list, should have been higher up on the list than some of the others.
And there are infinite more that we could have talked about. Infinite more.
What we do know about this topic, it is a complex topic. It is one that we all need to keep in mind. We all have a responsibility to keep in mind. We all need to look at every single fish in our aquarium and think, are we doing the best for this fish? Are we remembering that that fish was taken off of the reef? Are we okay with it? And can we keep doing it?
Yeah. And
one thing to keep in mind is always be willing to change your opinion with new information. 10 years ago, we thought six line wrasses were a great aquarium fish. We know better now.
10 years ago, I thought they were terrible too, by the way.
Well, I'm saying me personally.
But 10 years ago, you could have counted out any number of angels, tangs, butterflies that now we consider easy aquarium fish. So I would be hard-pressed to find anyone who has kept reefs for more than 5 years that hasn't kept one thing on any of our lists.
I think that's true.
It's not about beating yourself up for your aquarium or even feeling bad for having one. It's about knowing what's the most responsible option.
Do doing the best that we can.
Yeah.
It's an interesting point that came up a little bit that we hinted on that I do hope that we talk about in the later podcast. Those fish that are extremely challenging to keep, that maybe we just need to learn more. And when is it okay to try and do that? Orange spot filefish 5 years ago were on my list for that.
Yeah.
Now they are captive bred
at a
commercial level.
There is evidence that the batfish is probably the best example on my list, that the reason that they have a reputation for being so hard to keep is just because we haven't supplemented their diet enough.
Mm-hmm.
People treat them like big predators when actually they're omnivores that need a certain amount of algae in their diet. So if for the last 20 years people weren't giving them that, then yeah, they're a really difficult fish to keep. If we knew somebody who had an aquarium that was big enough to keep one, would we get it in and make sure that they know all that information? I'm not sure. We have to treat it on an individual by individual basis.
Agreed.
We need people to innovate and figure out how to keep things that we don't think we can keep. But like we said last time, you have to justify it.
Well, and getting back to the orange spot filefish, though, that's the kind of thing that I would say, like, that's why I say keep an open mind, because with stuff like that, I don't think, oh, we have to do it differently. I think we have to do it better.
Yeah.
Because that's basically a hummingbird fish. Like, that requires a very different feeding schedule than you would with anything else.
A very, very specific diet.
Yeah.
Well, there we have it. The top five lists from each of us. Different ideas, different topics.
These are the, let's say, 15 saltwater fish that you should not be keeping, or you should attempt to justify, or you should talk to us before buying so that we can really get into what it takes to actually keep that kind of thing alive and happy.
In the meantime, we want to thank our sponsors, Aquarium Rush, the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery, and Aquarium Services. In the meantime, everybody keep having a good time out there. Everybody stay safe, stay curious, and keep your hands wet.